Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name's Matt Christie. I'm joined again by my colleague John Dennan.
Hello.
John, how you doing?
A bit tired, Matt.
A bit tired. It has been a long week, hasn't it?
I feel like stuff's been going on.
There's been one or two things going on since we last sat down and spoke, and kind of the theme of the last 5 minutes of last week's podcast was...
It's never going to happen.
Is it going to happen? Almost terror, acceptance, the optimism was fading. However, within hours of us recording that podcast, it was all confirmed. Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao at last is on May 2, MGM Grand Las Vegas. If you fancy getting yourself a ticket, it's going to cost you a mere £45,000 if some of these ticket agency pricings are to be believed. That's not even ringside, that's down on the floor.
That's pretty ludicrous.
Well, it's insane, but it's a huge, huge fight. It's a huge fight, and it's a massive, massive shot in the arm for boxing. I know you and I have both shared moments where we were perhaps more optimistic than our colleagues, but I think deep down we were both fearful that it wasn't going to happen. John, for you personally, what does it mean to you that at last, after 5 years of speculation, after 5 years of will they, won't they, it's on off, that they've actually said it's on?
Yeah, it's just a bit surreal because the wait's been so long. It's almost too good to be true, and it shouldn't be, because it should be a case of sanity being restored, as in, you're the two best boxers on the planet, you're both in the same weight division, you can make the biggest fight in the sport. But how has it taken this long? So that's what it should be, but my first sense is the sense of, you know, just happiness that finally sanity has prevailed. And, you know, I actually think it would be a pretty good fight too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a sense, a real, real genuine sense of euphoria going around the boxing newsboys when it was all confirmed. And I know you were working harder than most on the website on Friday night, but we'd all kind of...
On your award-winning, your award-nominated website, Math.
We'll get to that. But we'd all done various things in the lead-up, and we were doing things over the weekend. But the general feeling does seem to be one of elation.
Yeah.
There is, however, as there tends to be with anything in life that seems to be good, people will find the bad in it. And there's a lot of people out there that are, oh, it's taken 5 years for it to I'm not interested anymore, I don't care, I don't want to watch it, I don't care, take it away from me, I don't care.
It's a very good impression of this, yeah.
But I mean, surely we should just all unite now and just champion the fact that this is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and also the weight has sort of fueled the hype. The weight is making it the gargantuan event that it's going to be. And also, as a naive optimist, which I am, I tend to think, you know, yeah, they both declined a bit from when they should have fought 5 years ago. But I kind of think that makes it a closer fight. I think, you know, I'm less confident, you know, I think Floyd Mayweather winning on points is maybe a less confident pick now after his 2014 than it would have been a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I alluded to that in this week's magazine, where we kind of asked five key questions about what may happen and everything else, and I did mention that it's not quite as cut and dry that Mayweather will be the winner, although that does seem to be the standard logic in that you know, Pacquiao being the shorter man will perhaps struggle to get in with Floyd Mayweather, that defensive master. But it's such a fascinating matchup. Neither has met anyone like the other man before. I'm not saying it's going to be fight of the year as in action wise, but at the same time, I don't think it's going to be a damp squib.
I'm saying it's going to be the welterweight thriller in Manila.
I think if we look back,
that's
a big shout. And when John Dennan speaks on these podcasts, it pays to listen, quite literally.
No, I diverge from accuracy to ridiculousness.
But I think what we've seen, and what the disappointing thing that we've seen in, I think if you go back, and there are kind of fights which you can compare this to, I think this is bigger than all the ones that I'll mention initially. Like, I think this is bigger than De La Hoya Mayweather, and that was a disappointing fight. I also think, but I accept that people may have a different viewpoint on this, I also think it's bigger than De La Hoya Trinidad, and that was a disappointing fight. But I think it will, in terms of action and in terms of people feeling satisfied, I think you'll exceed those fights. But at the same time, and without wishing to dwell on any negativity around this, because like I said at the start, this is a fantastic announcement for boxing. It's going to draw the sporting world and then some, and the rest, into the sport that we all love. And it's been a long time since that has happened. But do we need to ask ourselves some questions as to why it's been such a long time? We know that Pacquiao and Mayweather have had, both of them guilty of kind of making this fight such an elusive spectacle. But is it still so big 5 years down the line because there were no other stars within the sport? There is no one else of that quality in there. Whereas in years gone by, if a fight had slipped, if fighters had failed to agree terms, there would be another two fighters to go in there. There would be as much of a bigger fight you could make. Whereas now, in this current era, we're lacking those marquee stars.
Yeah, I think that's the worry, is like, who is the next Mayweather or Pacquiao going to be? Obviously, they're boxers with, great star potential. They're boxers with great ability. And they're boxers who are really popular in their own sort of local region, whether it's their, country or area. But who is the next boxing global superstar? The worry is, it's not clear, I don't know. And the other worrying thing is, what has been going wrong with the sport, the way the sport functions, in that it was such a torturous process to get what's obviously the best fight together. Why were the sort of major parties unable to work together? Hopefully that can change, because now I think, if Floyd Mayweather can fight Manny Pacquiao, anything's possible, Carl Frampton could fight Scott Quigg. Imagine that. Rigondo could fight someone decent. You just wonder if all the sort of, now we've got the mega fight, whether a couple of super fights could fall into place, Klitschko could fight Wilder, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, and it's interesting you mentioned Klitschko as well, because, you've got Mayweather and Pacquiao, which will be the centrepiece on May 2, but the week before that, you've got Vladimir Klitschko against Bryant Jennings, and I think that will be a bigger fight than it would have been as a consequence of Mayweather and Pacquiao taking place a week later.
And also, Canelo the following week.
And then you've got Canelo James Kirkland the week after. So there is a nice little period there where boxing could, if all goes well, really, really pick up a real serious bit of momentum in the sporting world.
Yeah, and actually in the months building up to it, what Al Heyman's done with getting all these, pretty big names on NBC and other channels, this Premier Boxing Champion Series, is it means we've got a stacked build-up to the Mayweather-Pacquiao.
Was that all part of a master plan?
I think so. It's got to be. Because, it's going to... The master plan with some of these Premier Boxing Champions events is to sort of cross-promote Showtime's programming, which will in turn promote the big one, Mayweather-Pacquiao on May 2. It must, must all be connected, that you can get that Heyman Boxing has got all these fights in place, a great platform for them, whilst the big one in May 2 is going to be drawing all this attention to the sport. What happens after May 2, I'm not so sure, but there's a great ride coming up in the build-up to it.
There really is. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you're not sure, you're not so sure of who's going to win.
Well, I think Mayweather's going to win.
You still think Mayweather. That's also the interesting thing. It was kind of the interesting thing for me, or the infuriating thing for me, for so long, was that the general school of logic was telling everybody that Mayweather would win, but he still wouldn't accept the fight. And even though, I've got a funny feeling that Pacquiao may do it. But anyway, we'll have plenty of time to talk about that in the weeks and weeks leading up to the fight. But because Because I would say about 80% of people, 80% of sane people would probably predict that Floyd Mayweather win. Floyd Mayweather is already a fairly big favourite. I think he's 3-1 on in most places. Why is this such a massive fight if there's a clear favourite? Generally, if a fight's gonna is that huge, then there isn't a clear favourite. It's a 50-50 fight. Here we're talking 80-20.
But there's so much to like about it. You know, the blend of styles, you know, Mayweather, masterful defensive boxer, Pacquiao, an excellent, you know, attacking fighter. So you have the sense that if Pacquiao hurts him, he'll be able to capitalise on that because Pacquiao, you know, throws such fast combinations. And, you know, the first time I was ringside for a Pacquiao fight was in November against Chris Algieri, and I know he didn't put him away, but I was watching it thinking, Pacquiao's really dangerous. So I think there's always going to be that element is if he gets you, he can hurt you. And the people who love Pacquiao really love Pacquiao. It's that contrast of personalities as well. Floyd Mayweather is going to be that brash villain. Pacquiao exactly. is going to be, you
people
know,
that
the
love Pacquiao hate people's Mayweather even more as well, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. And there are lots of people that love Mayweather too. Love, you know, what he's all about.
No, it's
It's also they are, you know, they may not be the biggest men in the world, but they're, you know, titanic personalities that are going in the ring, and so it's the build up's going to be so good.
Yeah, the build up, as with many things, I'm sure will be absolutely, absolutely fantastic. It really will. We won't dwell on it too much now because, as I say, there's about 9 weeks until the fight. We're gonna have plenty to talk about each week. There's going to be little things that are going on, I'm sure, with Mayweather and Pacquiao, but. But for now, the word from the Boxing News office regarding Mayweather and Pacquiao at last signing the contracts, at last confirming they're going to fight is
it Yeehaw?
Yeehaw!
Okay.
Okay, right. Let's move on. There was also other things going on last weekend. British fans certainly had, they had a couple of fights to choose from. First of which we'll talk about will be Gennady Golovkin against St. Helens' Martin Murray for the WBA middleweight title. I watched and blogged from home on this one. Paul Wheeler was there at ringside. His report is available in this week's magazine. He was having some issues with his power source, so he couldn't blog from there. Whilst blogging, you can't give, obviously, a completely accurate description of things, but my view was that Murray had his moments. They were very, very, they were few and far between.
Yeah.
But he was not dominated completely. It's not like, he was dominated, but I sensed that he'd won one or two rounds, but they were close rounds.
Maybe early on. I mean, I felt he was dominated. Looked to me like he was dominated, but so showed sort of freakish just toughness and bloody-mindedness. Like, Golovkin got to him so quick, so soon, and some of the shots Golovkin hit him looked like they'd be devastating for a sort of normal human. So Murray showed incredible, you know, grit and determination just to hang in there, but Golovkin looked absolutely... There's been a lot of talk about Golovkin as the most dangerous fighter in boxing, but he lived up to the hype against a quality opponent like Murray.
Martin Murray did astonishingly well. I think it was round four when he went down twice.
Yeah, and the body shot he got in with, I don't know how he got up from there.
It looked all over. When you see fighters go down from body shots like that, it's very, very rare that they continue. We saw it with Darren Barker against Daniel Gill, but with all the respect in the world to those two guys, Daniel Gill does not punch quite as hard as Gennady Golovkin. So Martin Murray did astonishingly well to get himself back in the fight. I think there was a period in round seven where he almost seemed to have a bit of a second win, Mike.
Yeah.
But there was still never any question as to who was going to win the fight. I've seen mixed reports about Gennady Golovkin. Some saying that this is evidence that he doesn't punch as hard as we thought he did, because Murray was allowed to continue and last into the 11th round. I'm not overly convinced by that. He looked like he was hitting pretty hard.
Yeah, he looked frighteningly powerful.
What's next for Gennady Golovkin? Let's not forget as well, I mean, people talk about Gennady Golovkin as if he's 21, 22 years old. He's not. He's 32 years old. Logic would tell us that he's closer to the end of his career than he is the start. Map out the ideal next few steps for him, because he's got the ingredients to be a superstar. Has he not? Has he not got that? He's got that kind of Pacquiao boyish charm with that, you know, completely contrasting ring persona as well.
Yeah.
What do we need to do in order to get Golovkin up to that level?
Well, he needs to get a fight with a big name. I think his problem is he's been sort of obliterating the contenders in style, but he needs something like, you know, Cotto, the WBC champion and a superstar himself. Golovkin needs that fight to get to that level. If I was Miguel Cotto, I mean, he's a warrior and everything, but he's not a middleweight, and I wouldn't be desperate to get in the ring with Gennady Golovkin. So failing Cotto, failing a superstar like, you know, a star like Canelo, then I guess he's got to try and hoover up the titles. So the winner of Peter Quill and Andy Lee, that would be a big fight in New York. The IBF middleweight title is going to be fought for by Hassan Najikam
and Lemieux.
And Lemieux. So if Lemieux wins, Lemieux Golovkin's a good fight for HBO.
They're interesting fights, but they're interesting in a similar way that perhaps Golovkin Murray was an interesting fight, in that there's absolutely not really any shadow of a doubt as to who's going to emerge victorious, surely.
I think there's a little bit more intrigue around Lemieux. Like, Lemieux in reality will probably get blasted away, but the fact that he can hit hard and Golovkin, you know, occasionally gets caught, never hurt, but caught, will add a sort of element of interest.
Would Golovkin not be better served chasing Andre Ward?
Yeah, but what's going on with Andre Ward?
In terms of his legacy, in terms of... Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. We've got to presume that Andre... I mean, there's been no retirement announcement, and there's also been no announcement of a fight. Last time before, I believe, was November 2013.
When we were young,
And I noticed as well that he's... Is he 31 now, 32? Andre Ward?
I don't know.
I know he
I'd
had
like
a
to think that he was older than me, but I doubt it.
He had a birthday in the week. In the number of that birthday, certainly began with
early 30s, yeah.
So, you know, he's, yeah, that's, at the moment, that's kind of a terrible, terrible waste of talent with Andre Ward.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps his peak years may already have gone with Andre Ward.
You don't want to come straight out of over a year's inactivity going straight to Golovkin.
But what a statement that would be. That, again, we know we try not to dwell too much on the messy, murky, knotted politics of boxing, but from just looking in and just looking at the big picture, Gennady Golovkin versus Andre Ward is a fight that I'd like to see. Let's make that happen.
I'll do what I can, mate. I can't promise anything.
Well, I'll leave it.
Isn't there a risk in that it won't be as explosive as, like, you know, Golovkin against another big puncher would be, because Andre Ward has the knack for just shutting down.
But I think even if he did, I think even if Gennady Golovkin was shut down, I mean, they've both got the potential to go into the Hall of Fame, Andre Ward and Gennady Golovkin. What they're lacking is the opponents to get them there, it would seem, at the moment. So it just seems like a natural. I think even if Andre Ward did go and win what some would deem ugly, it would still be a fantastic achievement to have beaten Gennady Golovkin, and will do his legacy the world of good. Perhaps, though, in answer to what you're saying, is that he may not do boxing in the short term quite as good.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't be an enjoyable spectacle. But I think that's the natural one to make. The other argument is he's not big enough to be a super middleweight, is he, Gennady Golovkin?
He hits hard enough. I'm going to express another theory.
Go on.
What if he hooves up a couple more titles at middleweight, then leaps up to the light heavyweight, takes on Sergey Kovalev, B-hop style?
He's surely too small for Kovalev.
Didn't he beat him up in sparring, or was that just one of the voices in my head saying that?
No, which well, is possible. There have been stories of that nature. I haven't seen any evidence of it.
No. And what does sparring mean? It's just stuff happening.
But there are, but you do sense that he may have to move out of the middleweight division. Ideally, he would unify the title, and that would be a huge, huge step on the way to the Hall of Fame. But you do sense that if he is to fulfil, you know, this greatness that many people think that he can, he will have to move upwards and out of the middleweight division.
And fight Vladimir Klitschko at heavyweight.
That's probably a bit too much.
Klitschko would never go for that.
No, he probably wouldn't. Okay, also, over in Germany, Paul Smith, you were doing a similar thing. You were at home, you were blogging on the Paul Smith fight. I still haven't seen this, I'll be honest. I still haven't seen the Paul Smith.
Good fight.
Arthur Abraham fight. So talk us through it.
It was a good fight, exciting. Obviously closer than Murray Golovkin, but still Arthur Abraham in the end was a clear winner. Abraham in a very tight guard that Smith struggled to break through, and there was a moment when you just thought Smith could wilt and break in the fight, but he really dug deep and kept at it. And there were moments, whether it was Abraham taking a breather, or it looked like Smith had hurt him with body shots, you know, and Smith certainly came out swinging at the end. He needed a knockout, and it was going to be very difficult to get it. So entertaining to watch, but Abraham sort of, you know, no complaints about the scores in Abraham's favour this time. Obviously, first time around, it was not the victor, but it was the how widely the judges had scored in favour of Abraham that sort of fueled this rematch.
There was some criticism kind of aimed, perhaps unfairly, towards Paul Smith before the first fight, in that he didn't deserve it. He didn't deserve the first shot. It's fair to say that he has gone far above and beyond expectation by number one pushing Arthur Abraham very close in the first fight, but by what you say, giving a more than respectable effort in the second, going the distance.
Yeah.
Paul Smith's stock, though, how much higher is it as a result of those two fights? Has he proved that he's a world class fighter? Does he deserve to be in and amongst the world class guys? Should he make another run at the world title? Should he go back down to domestic level, or at the age of 32,
sail,
does he walk away?
Sunset.
Will he find the motivation there to give it another go? Because is Abraham the weakest of those super middleweight champions?
I think so. I think Abraham's the weakest. I think Paul Smith's performances have shown he's a world-class fighter, and so sort of justified him getting the shot in the first place. But you can't beat Abraham, and obviously a lot of people in the world can't beat Abraham, yeah, but I think Abraham is, if not going backwards, certainly the weakest of the actually going backwards is unfair, because Abraham was better than the first time around.
Yeah.
Abraham has shown he has a ropey performance, but can regroup, but it's hard to see where he would win a world title now. And it would be pretty hard to go from, you know, a good, enjoyable, respectable world title fight to, it would be hard to go from that to fighting Rocky Fielding at the Echo Arena in Liverpool, even though that's a good Liverpool fight, that will be a good atmosphere as well. But you just wonder if there are going to be lucrative opportunities out there for Paul Smith. If you're another world champion and you think, okay, and you fancy your chances against Paul Smith, but you can also justify the world title fight because Paul's proven he belongs up there. You know, there probably will be opportunities for him out there.
But what does he do in the meantime? Because he's not going to be offered a world title fight next time out, is he?
No.
So what does he do? Does he go back down to domestic level? Does he kind of take in some eight rounders against journeymen? Or does he consciously make a decision, right, I'm fighting at world level, and he goes back in against a top 10 guy?
If you can get the breaks, I think go for them. Yeah. I think.
Or even someone, say maybe not someone that we would put in the top 10, but someone that's in that's relatively nicely ranked by some of the governing bodies who, let's face it, have a few curious names in and around the leaders,
exactly.
Don't they?
Yeah, and Paul had been highly ranked with the WBO for a long time. So even though, you know, some people said he didn't deserve his shot at their title, he was going to get that shot, you know, sooner or later. You almost expected it to come sooner than it actually did come because he'd been so highly ranked for such a long time. So I think he probably, if he doesn't retire, and there would be no, there would be no shame in thinking, all right, I've had two world title fights, which is more, you know, originally he thought that one world title shot was his last chance. So that's, you know, more world title fights than expected. He's got interests outside of actually being in the ring, obviously commentating and broadcasting and that kind of stuff.
Really intelligent, personable guy, isn't he, Paul Smith?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's done a lot. He's done really, really well. He's done himself proud, did his family proud out in Germany, did British boxing proud. We'll go back to the Germany bill in a second. I feel like I've just mentioned what's next for Paul Smith. Gennady Golovkin we've discussed at length. Martin Murray, again, it's a difficult, that's three attempts now where he's failed at world titles. Matthew Macklin found it difficult to kind of rebound from that.
Yeah.
I mean, Macklin, I would suggest, has had a more punishing career than Martin Murray, although Martin Murray
will
have put a few miles on his clock with that fight. What does he do now, Martin Murray? Obviously, he's been operating at world level since the Felix Sturm fight. He's probably given himself, he's put himself out there because he was fighting Golovkin in the American market. I think he's got a lot of positive feedback from there. I think people are kind of saying that he's one of the best five, certainly 10 middleweights in the world on that evidence.
Yeah.
What would you advise Martin to do next?
I think after, because, you know, being in the ring with Golovkin for 11 rounds, that's a painful experience. So you need a bit of a break, you know, and you don't want to be, and after that fight, you need to rebuild that, you know, your confidence. He's so unlucky, isn't he? Like, you know, creditable draw with Sturm in Germany, pushed Martinez in Argentina, and then fought the best in the business, or the best in the division. So you got to sort of regroup, maybe you know, have a cup, you know, maybe ease his way back into it. Nice little domestic fight with Matthew Macklin, if Matthew Macklin sort of rebuilds himself. I think there'd be a lot of interest in that.
There would be in that, yeah, and a nice payday for them both, I'm sure.
Yeah. He's big for middleweight, though. You know, could be the time to move up to super middleweight.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, once upon a time he was going to fight Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's a fight for the future HBO would like, that would be on...
I think we'll see a lot of opportunities present themselves to Murray.
Yeah.
Also on that bill, Lee Haskins has perhaps at last secured a world title fight. Perennially overlooked at world level. And you can see why it's Lee Haskins. You know, it's a term I don't overly like, but he has been perhaps a bit too good for his own good down there, hasn't he?
Yeah. But who's he going to fight with the world title?
I'm not sure. I don't know who he'll be put forward for, but he's got to that point now, hasn't he? Where out of all the British guys, like the Jamie McDonald, Stuart Hall, they're guys that Haskins has been in with.
Yeah, he's beaten them.
Yeah, that you really because when you speak to Lee, there's a sense of bitterness there, which you completely understand. You completely get it. You completely get it. And hopefully this will be the year that he gets his title shot. Also on that bill, Huey Fury, who understandably, you know, because he turned professional so much later, he's not really regarded quite as highly as his cousin Tyson Fury, But he's putting together a promising little career there, Huey Fury, isn't he?
Yeah, he was on a good roll before he got ill, like a good run, very busy. And then at Monaco, he got a good win. So, I think he's just sort of, Peter Fury knows what he's doing, doesn't he? So it seems like they're just quietly building and building. So Huey Fury is definitely one to watch.
Also in the heavyweight division, let's switch back to Germany. David Price laboured a bit.
Until the finish, it was a bit of a struggle to watch that fight.
Why do you think that was? I've read and heard a few people were saying that perhaps he wanted the rounds. He felt like he needed the rounds. A few people still attributed it to perhaps a bit of a confidence issue. But there's little doubt that David Price does not look like the guy who was knocking over guys pre-Tony Thompson, does he?
Yeah, because you would have expected, the guy he was fighting didn't look up to much. With Price's power, you thought he could have just, blasted through him. And, and a sort of a more exciting showing like that would have helped, inject some momentum back into Price's career, helped sort of, beat the drum for maybe a big fight with Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury later this year. So at least he got the sort of highlight reel finish. I wonder, it's hard to say, obviously losing to Tony Thompson, that did knock his confidence. He's been open about that. Now he's had those confidence builders. This must be his last confidence builder. He's got to, he's got to come back to England and sort of show how he copes with the pressure of fighting back in Liverpool. But I wonder if he's trying to change his style and use his height and his jab. Maybe he thinks these are going to be the keys. He's got to become the Liverpool Klitschko.
Perhaps it's far too early to say. We don't know. But the few eyebrows were raised when he said he would sign in with the Sauerlands. He was going to fight on the continent for 12 months. The general feeling though was that it might be a good thing, and that it keeps him out of the spotlight, keeps the pressure off his shoulders a little bit. What's your instinct telling you? Has it been a good or bad move for David Price at this stage?
My guess would be good, but with his first couple of fights, if he did want to sort of rebuild his confidence, then it's been good because it's taken him off the radar. He could get about his business without too much attention going on him. But boxing isn't just a sport. It is show business to an extent. It is about building your profile and building momentum and how people perceive you. And so he doesn't. He's got. I'd like to see the sort of. I'd like to see him moving a bit faster to get that sort of. We're all really enthusiastic about David Price. It would be nice to get that excitement back because he's still dangerous. He can still hit. So I think, any heavyweight should be cautious about fighting David Price, especially if Price goes into that fight as the underdog, because the pressure will be off his shoulders and he will remain technically good and physically powerful.
Absolutely.
So it's been slowly with David Price, but I'd like to see him back under the spotlight a bit more, and I would like to see him back fighting in front of his home fans.
I agree with you. I think David Price still has a lot to offer. Okay, let's move on. We have already been talking for getting on for 35 minutes. We've still got the weekends.
I need a latte, Matt.
We've got the weekends action that's coming up to talk about. Let's start with what is going to be seen on terrestrial television. Now, we had Martin Murray's brave bid for middleweight glory against Gennady Golovkin televised by Channel 5 last week. This week we've got it on ITV. It's like the good old days. It's like the 1980s and 90s that I remember so well. Is it the right fight though for ITV to, which let's face it, it's going to be take a punt on, Carl Frampton, Chris Avalos. Good fight?
Yeah, good fight. Good fight, I think Frampton will win. And maybe even an exciting fight that Frampton wins in style as well. It's a good fight. Frampton's, you know, he's a great personality. The atmosphere, I think, will be great. Even though, like, I was at Frampton's world title winning fight in that open air stadium in a Titanic quarter, which was freezing cold until Frampton arrived, and there was just so much noise, so much going on, that he forgot about the horrendous near-death conditions. So it was like, you know, it was a special night because of that. Like, you know, just everyone, it felt like the whole city was just there in this one place. You know, it was very special. And so, and that, you know, and that was in the sort of, you know, really open air, as in the wind was cutting in from, what, I don't know, the sea or wherever I was. Whereas this will be in the Odyssey Arena, so not as many people, but I expect it to be loud.
This is clearly a vehicle for Carl Frampton. I don't think anybody would deny that. He appears to have it all. He's got the personality. He's an exceptional, exciting fighter, handsome guy. Are we perhaps focusing a bit too much on Frampton? As a result, will that be an advantage for Chris Avalos, who's coming over very much as the underdog? And he is a decent fighter. He's got a good dig. He hasn't lost for a few years. When he lost, there were close decisions. He's a tidy boxer.
Yeah.
How much of a chance has Chris Avalos got of really, really upsetting this Carl Frampton Express?
I mean, I'd like to say there's a good chance, because he's a good fighter who should be confident and with no pressure on him. But I can't see him derailing Frampton. From what I can see, Frampton's, you know, been very focused and isn't going to take his eye off the prize for this one. So I think it's going to be a good fight, but I wouldn't bet a cheeky fiver on Frampton losing.
You would not bet a cheeky fiver on Frampton losing. Going back to the television platform, it's on ITV. Remains to be seen how many viewers tune in. I would imagine there'll be a fair few. There would be a fair few. It's a good time of night for boxing.
Is there anything else going on as well? Like,
there was bound to be some kind of nonsense going on. What do you mean? Like some,
I don't know.
Like X Factor or something.
Well, exactly. I only watch boxing, so I don't know. Apparently, EastEnders is big now.
I mean, yeah, and that's live as well these days.
Is it?
Apparently.
Oh, yeah. That's just for all the Twitter, isn't it?
Barry McGuigan has obviously, you know, he's gone all out here with this. He's really, you know, he's worked tirelessly behind the scenes to secure this opportunity for Carl Frampton. McGuigan, for those old enough to remember his heyday, when he won the world title against Eusebio Pedroza, that was drawing record figures, and then he fought, I think it was, and forgive me if the pronunciation is incorrect, Danilo Cabrera in his first defence. I think that is the contest that actually holds the record numbers for terrestrial television. But such was the excitement around McGuigan's coronation that I remember, and I was only young at the time, but I remember this guy, Cabrera, was not expected to win, and he took McGuigan into the 14th round, and it was really, really give and take. Would a fight like that for Frampton be better off in terms of his, in terms of the spectacle and in terms of drawing new fans, rather than, say, Frampton walking through Avalos in three rounds?
Either's probably, as long as he wins, either's pretty good for him. You know, because if he just takes the guy, it'll be a bit of a shame if he took the guy out in, you know, a couple of rounds, and I don't think he will. So you'd lose a bit of the event, but it, you know, if it turned out to be a much harder than expected fight and a real struggle, I think that wouldn't do him any harm either.
Well, no, I mean,
I don't think it'll be, you know, sort of a stinker in terms of styles and that kind of thing.
It's definitely an intriguing fight. It always interests me to see how these guys, particularly one as young as Frampton, although he seems so exceptionally level-headed and he seems to take everything in his stride, there's a hell of a lot of pressure on him, arguably more so than the night he challenged for the title.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's got the championship belt to keep. He's got the crowd to keep happy. And he's just got this massive, massive platform on which to do it. It's always fascinating watching people and see how they cope with pressure. So far, there's been absolutely no evidence to suggest that Frampton won't be able to cope with the pressure because, as I said earlier, he's taken everything in his stride. Will this be worrying him a little bit? We've all spoken to Carl a lot. I think you've seen him. Have you seen him in the gym recently?
Yeah. I went over to watch a bit of sparring. I spoke to Shane and Barry McGuigan there.
Is there any indication that he's feeling the pressure?
From what I could see, he seemed perfectly relaxed and pretty good in sparring as well. But they've got you know, sort of quite a quiet, quite low key. It's like a small gym. It's in Battersea, so it's away from, you know, Belfast, where he's loved. So it would have been very quiet and very focused in his training camp, which will be good for him. You know, now it's fight week. I think he had his final press conference today. The weigh-in will be tomorrow. I reckon the weigh-in will be loud, so I'll be over there for that. So I think that'll be a very different sort of shift of circumstance. But he does seem level-headed. He does seem like he'll take it in his stride. There is pressure. He's got to rise to the occasion. You know, and if he does, that might help the performance, bring more out of him.
Intriguing. And I must admit, I love the fact that it's on ITV.
Yeah.
And I hope it's a success for that reason.
Yeah. Well, he's got a ready-made British rival in Scott Quigg. That's a great fight.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope, you know, imagine if that was on ITV, that
Quigg
could
Frampton
be
on ITV would be something else. Over on Box Nation at the weekend, we've spoke about his cousin Huey Fury, who had a decent win at the weekend. This time we've got Tyson Fury. He's fighting Christian Hamer in kind of a marking time kind of fight. Fury, you would think, has already got his world title shot assured. Credit to him for not just waiting around for it. And also credit to him, and perhaps credit to Frank Warren and Mick Hennessy for pulling out Christian Hamer, who is, I would suggest, flattered by his WBO number 3 ranking. But as a consequence of that, he will look good on Fury's record if he's successful. How likely is Christian Hamer to turn into a banana skin for Tyson Fury?
I don't think it's likely. And Fury has looked, you know, his recent sort of training camps, he's looked like he's on it, though. It's just in the past, he has this propensity to get into rumbles that didn't need to be rumbles, get caught when he didn't need to get caught, get knocked over by fighters who shouldn't have knocked him over. So if those sort of bad habits re-emerge, then, you know, in the heavyweight, you know, against another big man, could be dangerous. I don't see him losing. Could be a fun fight, hopefully a fun fight, but it will only be fun if Fury makes it fun. If he boxes to his capabilities,
well,
then
this is it, isn't it? I mean, prior to the Derek Chisora rematch, I think we could have safely said that Tyson Fury was the most entertaining, most fun heavyweight in the world, and it's for pretty much the reasons you've just described. You know, we could name several fights. Cunningham fight comes to mind. He seemed to make that a little bit harder than he needed to. A lot of his fights he was making harder.
He sings afterwards.
His wild, erratic nature. But against Derek Chisora, he didn't seem to take a single chance. And although it was a disappointing fight, because I think people were expecting it to be a bit of a war, I was really impressed with what Tyson Fury did against Derek Chisora there. We still don't know if something was not quite right with Chisora, but irrespective of that,
he doesn't make excuses, does he, Chisora?
No, he won every second of every round, Tyson Fury. Yeah. And if he boxes like that, I genuinely think he's a handful for absolutely anyone in the world. I'm not sitting here now picking Tyson Fury to beat Vladimir Klitschko, but I do think at the top of his game, Tyson Fury is perhaps number 2 at the moment, world heavyweight.
Better than Wilder?
I would, at this moment, I would say so. I would say so. Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's a great fight. Wilder Fury.
Wilder Fury, as a fun fight, is probably better.
Yeah.
You're probably guaranteed fun with Wilder and Fury from the build up right through the fight to whatever, however it ends, than Wilder versus Klitschko or Fury versus Klitschko.
And also, it'd probably be good for both of them because I think whoever wins that fight will have set them in good stead to challenge Klitschko.
No, absolutely. So we're expecting Tyson Fury to win. What's going to be the situation? Do we know? Because his father has obviously, or not obviously, depending on whether you know or not. But his father has been released from prison. Obviously, Tyson, through the years, exceptionally close to his father. He was, had involvement in the training camp. Peter Fury has since come to the fore. Will there be any elements of confusion, do you think, in the corner? Do you think this will have affected Tyson Fury's preparation in any way? Or do you think it's going to have a positive effect?
I just don't know, because obviously Tyson's trained by his uncle Peter Fury, yeah. But his father's out of prison. He's a very, he's a very important influence on Tyson, or a very key influence on Tyson. So even if his trainer and his father are working well together, it's going to be hard to not have two voices coming at you.
Yeah.
And that could create confusion. So perhaps that's a possibility. But you can't really say that with any certainty. That's just a possibility to be aware of. Will there be some sort of crossed wires when you've got two key influential voices?
Speaking of two voices, it moves us on to the chief support, it is chief support, but it's going to have the feel of a main event, I'm sure. Chris Eubank Jr. is in a big fight. I'd prefer to call it an eliminator than a shot at a world title, the interim WBA title, which is heavily diluted version of the WBA belt. Dmitry Chudinov there will be his opponent. Of course, there was a lot taken from his most recent fight, Eubank Jr.'s most recent fight against Billy Joe Saunders. One was that he was better than we expected, or he certainly. There was large parts of the contest where he's better than we expected,
but still needs work.
And the other one was, of course, the chaotic scenes in the corner between Ronnie Davis and Chris Eubank Senior, both attempting to offer advice of sorts, and as a result, Eubank Junior was really. He didn't really have a leader in there, but let's face it, he didn't seem to want one either in the build-up. He rather controversially said Ronnie Davis is just there to put my gum shield in or something along those lines. Eubank Jr., will he have learned a few lessons from that?
I don't think the Eubanks listen to anyone outside of the Eubanks, and that's just the way they do things. It's interesting, like Eubank Jr. was sparring with Paul Smith ahead of his world title fight, and Paul Smith was quite, he saw sort of Eubank Sr. as the main voice when it comes to Jr.'s training, and that he thought that sort of just standing in the corner not saying anything was just for show during the fight. And I suppose Chris Eubank Sr. has said things like that, as in, I've given him everything he needs to know. He just needs all I just need to stand back and let him execute it. So I think his father seems to be the main training influence. And he had a new guy on the pads for his public workout, didn't he?
I don't know, I wasn't there.
Yeah, so I'm not sure.
Ronnie Davis has suffered the injury, so he hasn't really been able to get that hands on. But Eubank Jr. has kind of cleared anything up, saying the only two men that I do trust are my father and Ronnie Davis.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see. But it's kind of interesting, and I wondered it before the Billy Joe Saunders fight. Eubank Jr. was kind of going into the Billy Joe Saunders fight saying quite so loudly and brashly and arrogantly, quite frankly, that he he wouldn't need it anyway because he was going to go in there and knock Billy Joe Saunders out. And it did cross my mind then, what happens if he's drawn into a fight and he needs that guidance? Everybody needs guidance sometimes. I don't care who you are. And Eubank Jr. perhaps may have done something differently sooner in that fight with Billy Joe if he'd have had the correct guidance sooner, or he was willing to listen to the correct guidance. It's interesting. This is really interesting to me to see what Eubank Jr. does next, to see if he can show the maturity. Chudinov, John, you've seen him ringside a couple of times.
He was unimpressive. He's got a brother who's good, though. Or yes. By all accounts, his brother's good.
Yes. At light middleweight. Is he at light middleweight?
I don't know. I just
think he's at light middleweight.
He sparred with Macklin.
Yeah.
Ages ago now.
So are we expecting Eubank Jr. to win this one? And what happens if he is drawn into a fight again? It's 6-7 rounds, the fight's in the balance. Will we see him listen? Will we see him be, give me some advice, Pops, or, you know, Ronnie, talk to me?
They're unpredictable, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe if he's going to listen to anyone, it will be his father, and maybe his father will, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how his father acts. Like, is his father going to be more, you know, less standoffish and more engaged in what happens? Yeah, maybe that will be the new twist in the tale, but yeah, I wait with curiosity to see.
It's going to be an interesting night. Also on that bill is a rematch between Liam Walsh and Joe Murray, which was a good scrap last year.
Was it even longer than last year?
I remember watching it when I was still living in East London, I think, when I watched that.
It was at the Coffer Box, wasn't it?
Yeah, so maybe it was.
I thought...
It was 2013, it was September.
Was it when Billy Joe fought John Ryder?
No.
All right.
I can't remember. Anyway, I don't know.
It was a mammoth show at the Copper Box.
Yeah. Okay, right. We've been talking for 53 minutes nearly. So thanks, everybody, for listening to us. Please do get involved in boxing news. The current issue is packed with Mayweather Pacquiao stuff. It's also got all the usual coverage from the British boxing rings, from World Boxing Rings. We've got exclusive interviews in there. It's really worth picking up this week. And of course, have a look at the website as well, because we've just been shortlisted by the Sports Journalists Association, the equivalent of our Oscars, the equivalent of the Academy Awards. We've been shortlisted, the website, for the best specialist website. Everybody at Boxing News put in a hell of a lot of work last year and continues to do so on the website.
But I'd like to take most of the credit.
You can do that, John.
I will.
You can do that. You can do that. So, yeah, so do have a look at the website, and it will be constantly updated with goodies, as it has been for last year, hence the recognition. And hopefully, well, we're going to pick up the award in March.
What do we do to rig this in our favour?
We don't, we can't, and we'll wait and see what happens. So anyway, that'll do it for this week's show. We'll be back next week, where we'll be talking about Frampton, Tyson Fury, probably Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. We'll get a couple of minutes worth. Something I didn't mention, actually, and just get the magazine to find out. We have got exclusive stuff from Amir Khan in here.
And what next for him?
So, yeah, pick up this week's magazine. You won't regret it. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Appreciate your support, as always. And good luck to every single fighter who is in the ring this weekend. And we will speak to you next week. Thanks ever so much.